When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hi, everybody. Obviously, the weather has been a major topic of conversation in the news because of these historic floods that we've seen in Texas. And we're going to continue to cover that story. But I saw something recently in the Washington Post by a journalist and meteorologist I really admire. Turns out I've actually been following him for some time. So this is exciting to be able to speak to him today. And here's what the Post said. And this is why we're having this conversation today. It says, tropical moisture will continue to pool across central and eastern states in the days and weeks ahead as a heightened risk for flash flooding continues. So what we saw in Texas obviously was, again, a historic event, flash flooding. But what got me about this post is that it's forward-looking, that this could be something that we can see in more places. And part of reporting on this and wanting to make sure that we're aware, I reached out to Ben Knoll, who is a meteorologist and also the global weather writer for the Washington Post. And we're lucky enough that he's joining us from New Zealand, which, by the way, I just have to share, Ben, with everybody that when I was trying to figure out the time zone difference, you really stumped me. You know, I've done a lot of interviews, a lot of different time zones, but this one got me, Ben. So why don't you tell us that story first? How did you get involved in meteorology and why New Zealand?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me today. About 15, 16 hours into the future, depending on where you live in the United States, this time of the year. So the next day, it is here in New Zealand. So I have been forecasting the weather ever since I was a young kid. I grew up north of New York City. So for me, what I caught the weather bug from the blizzard of 1996. And that is, a storm that dropped maybe 2 feet of snow in New York. And ever since that moment, there was like something, a flip that switched in my head, and a switch that flipped rather. And I wanted to understand the science behind the storms. So one thing led to another as I went through school, elementary school, middle school, high school. I was kind of like the weather nerd in the class. And I was always really into, knowing if there was going to be a snow day the next day or not. But I took that to college. So I went to the State University of New York at Oswego, which has a great meteorology program on the shores of Lake Ontario. After that, I worked for AccuWeather, which is a pretty well-known weather company in the United States, big app. Big social media presence. Then I went all the way around the world, a job opportunity in New Zealand. I was in my 20s at the time. It's kind of one of those things, like once in a lifetime opportunity to go to a different country. You know, it's like starting over in many respects. I mean, culturally, meeting people, you know, restarting your life. But it was probably like the best decision I've ever made because, you know, it's you see those different cultures, you meet different people, it changes your perspective on the world around you. I met my wife, I've lived here for 10 years now. And now I have a really awesome job, a fascinating job, and one that, you know, certainly is quite a bit of responsibility. And that involves keeping folks across the United States and the world abreast of the very latest when it comes to weather. And, this week especially, we've had a lot of weather, 550 flooding reports across at least 35 states in just the last week alone, including Texas. We had, of course, the deadly floods there, New Mexico, North Carolina, all in the last week. So it's been very busy for me, but, really happy to be here chatting with you today about it all.
Well, I'm just thinking of the territory that you cover, a lot of ground. I mean, when you're like, my beat is the world. Any story on the weather in the world kind of falls underneath your umbrella, no pun intended. And what an interesting story to how you got to where you are. I wonder if the distance too sometimes is helpful, Ben, that you're not actually in so close to weather events. Is that helpful to have a little distance sometimes just so that you're just looking at the science?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the distance and the time difference actually makes for an interesting, you know, I'm able to basically do my work in like the lead up to the East Coast morning, which happens to be quite good for, it's like I'm working an overnight in the US. So that's actually quite good for audiences in the post who are waking up, looking at their phone first thing, and they've got a fresh, you know, perspective on the weather or the big event of the day, which, you know, I often write. And you know, distance factor, I think it's incredible. I mean, today, no matter where you are in the world, if you have an internet connection, you can probably do this from anywhere. You know, you could do it from the Antarctic ice sheet, you know, if you wanted to. You could. So, I mean, that's you know, I think pretty remarkable that we've come such a long way with technology. So, you know, I download every single day, like screes of data from international centers, you know, got a rack, a computer system, and it kind of tells me, or it alerts me rather, to like the big events of the world. So, you know, pretty sophisticated stuff. But again, you know, I think technology really keeps us linked across, you know, whatever. I'm 8,500 miles away from DC.
I'm really looking forward to asking about the technology, and it's hard because I want to jump around a lot. And I want to talk about the last week and the historic floods in Texas, but I don't want to keep the forward-looking forecast from our audience, because that is why I reached out. I thought, wait a minute, is what we're seeing in Texas, I don't want to say a microcosm because it certainly is not a microcosm, but maybe a bellwether of other floods that we could see this summer. And if so, we have the opportunity to give people a little bit of a heads up of what they could see, so they're not so shocked by the news, but also prepared depending on where they live. So what are you seeing going into this, the week after this historic flood in Texas? What are you seeing and why are you seeing it?
Yeah. So look, July, it can be a very stormy month across the United States. We have very high humidity levels, which we're all, you know, pretty familiar with in the central and eastern U.S. And that comes from the Gulf of Mexico. So we get these kind of plumes of air, moisture, invisible plumes above our heads in the sky that fuel these storms that we've been seeing, water vapor in the sky. And what we're seeing this year is a particularly stormy pattern over the central and eastern states that's harnessing all of that water vapor. And as we go through the coming days, this weekend, and into next week, many of the same states, including Texas, including eastern parts of New Mexico, expecting more potentially flooding downpours. Now, I don't see anything, I think, this weekend, the coming days, that's going to be as intense as what we saw on the 4th of July in the Hill Country. However, I wouldn't be surprised to see similar events of that kind of magnitude, or at least, you know, events that could bring, you know, the potential for life-threatening flash flooding in the weeks and months ahead because of this kind of pattern that we have. And, you know, why is it so rainy? Why is it so wet? Why have there been so many floods? Well, a lot of the water that ends up in the sky above our heads kind of is evaporated from the oceans. And the Gulf of Mexico and the Western Atlantic Ocean, so we're talking kind of east of the Carolinas, east of Florida, as well as, you know, east of Texas and in the Gulf, those waters are warmer than average. And because they're warmer than average, they can actually contribute more moisture into the air. A warmer atmosphere, which is what we have now, can hold more water vapor. And water vapor is fuel for storms. So this has kind of been this, I would say, almost like a quiet trend. We're kind of aware of temperatures warming up, but kind of invisible to us, but in the skies above, has been this gradual you know, trend toward more moisture in the atmosphere. So oftentimes a warmer world can be a wetter world.
So I understand what you're saying. So there's this gradual trend that's creating this environment that is leading to then more wet weather and then the opportunity for more flash flooding. Is there anything unique that you're seeing particularly to this time period that isn't part of a gradual trend but stands out to you as like, wait a minute, this is something different that we haven't necessarily seen before?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen over the last couple of years on a global scale is in 2024, it was a record breaker for the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere. And I think to, you know, use an analogy, water vapor is like fuel in your gas tank. And the more fuel that you have, the farther you can go. So the more fuel there is in the atmosphere, the more rain that can fall out of the sky. It's not a one-to-one relationship. It doesn't, you know, mean that just because there's a record that you're going to get a record amount of rainfall. But it's kind of like, you know, loading the dice in a casino. If you put some weight on the dice and whatever, you roll it and it rolls, you know, a certain number more frequently than not. I think what this is doing, this trend is doing, is kind of tipping the odds toward more intense rainfall over time. Doesn't mean that, you know, tomorrow, the next day, you're going to have another, you know, catastrophic flood in your backyard. But I think as time goes on, this is something that we're all going to become more aware of, this kind of increasing potential for rainfall extremes across the country and the world, for that matter. There have been floods in China, really catastrophic floods in China the last couple of days and weeks, as well as Japan and Tokyo, actually, just the other day. So, I mean, floods, rain, heavy rain, it's been part of our history. But as scientists, meteorologists, we can look at the data and, you know, actually understand how things are changing with time. And it's that change that, you know, allows us to kind of foresee, you know, the things that may happen in the coming days, weeks, and even years and decades ahead. So, yeah, it's been a really interesting couple of years. And I think, you know, as we go through the next, frankly, the next couple of decades, we'll probably see more of these types of events than fewer of them.
When you're thinking about the next week and you're thinking about where the next big flood event could be, I know that can be difficult to totally predict. And we're going to talk about forecasting and accuracy in just a second. Where are you looking? So as you're getting prepared for this week, where are some of the hot spots where you feel like we could see some flare-ups, for lack of a better term, of flooding?
Yeah, so I mean, as I'm looking across the weekend here, the coming days, you know, northern Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth, toward Oklahoma City, potentially, eastern New Mexico, so that same area that saw the flooding earlier in the week. And then into early next week, you know, a very populated part of the country, Sunday, Monday, the eastern seaboard, likely to experience more flash flooding as well. So that, you know, that includes D.C. and Philadelphia, even maybe New York City. And into the Carolinas, North Carolina had flooding from a tropical storm just last weekend. It's another area that could see yet more downpours. And then further into next week, we actually will be looking toward the Gulf as there may be a tropical storm that tries to form near or just west of Florida, maybe Louisiana, southern Mississippi, potentially in that area. So whether or not that storm forms, it looks to be kind of a focal point for downpour. So I think, you know, if we're fast forwarding a week from now and we look back, there will have been, you know, more significant flash flooding events across the country in the next week.
So more activity to come. And it's been difficult as a journalist. You know, we're so close to the flooding in Central Texas. I'm about 90 minutes away from where I'm sitting right now. Obviously a huge story because of the historic nature, but at the same time, as I'm covering the story in Texas, I'm seeing the flooding in New Mexico. I'm seeing the flooding in North Carolina, and it gets you really thinking of, wait a minute, are these events connected? And it sounds like, you know, not necessarily like point A to point B, but connected in the same ingredients that are causing some of the moisture. Is that an accurate statement, Ben?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Exactly. I mean, this has been, this is not the same storm in all three cases. I mean, one was the Texas event was a tropical storm remnants turned thunderstorm cluster. You know, New Mexico was kind of this renegade thunderstorm, and North Carolina was the remnants of a tropical storm. Three different storms, but they all kind of harnessed this same pool of moisture that has been quite literally near record levels or record levels across almost the entirety of the United States. So indeed, you know, they are connected by that fact.
Well, and that leads to the question, is this the new normal? But then as soon as I'm thinking of that question, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, we had a very similar flood along the Guadalupe River, you know, in the 1930s, and, you know, just in recent modern times as well, where there was historic flooding. So we've seen these events over the last 100 years, But then is it a new normal? You know, then how do you tackle that question? Because you're talking about some, you know, warmer temperatures, different dynamics, but we have seen some of it in the past. So how do you make sense of that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, these events have happened in the past. You know, heavy rain, flooding is nothing new. But, you know, what I like to do is kind of break down the ingredients that we have on the table. And when you have, you know, in this case, one ingredient, you know, which is water vapor, we're kind of stacking the critical ingredient, you know, that makes for, you know, heavy rain and potential flooding. We're kind of adding more of that ingredient. So it's like, instead of having, you know, a single cheeseburger, you know, you got a double or a triple cheeseburger now. And, you know, that particular ingredient in the middle, the most important one that makes the dish, we now have more of that around. So, of course, historically, you can look back and find these floods. I think what we as scientists, as meteorologists want to understand is, you know, will these events, you know, increase in severity or frequency in the future? And can we point to data that will give us a strong understanding or confidence that that will be the case? And I think, you know, we can do that. I mean, that's kind of the job, I think, as scientists, just to dissect those kind of critical ingredients that turn, you know, the single burger into a double or triple burger. And then, you know, that is what is kind of the real meat here, is that trend toward a kind of a moister world. And that's kind of borne out by these, you know, kind of sporadic random flood events that, you know, may well increase in either frequency or severity as we go into the future.
Interesting. So, and as you mentioned, this question about the tools that we're using, how accurately we're using them, what does that look like? And so I do have some questions about new technology. I specifically would like to ask you about AI as well, Ben, just to get your thoughts on it. But if we could just look back, and I want to look back just on the last week with the reverence for the fact that this is still a developing story. We still are in a place where not everyone who is missing has been found. The numbers continue to go up of fatalities and injuries and rescues and recoveries. And so I want to tackle this question thinking of that in mind too. When you're looking at the technology that is available, that was available going into this storm in Texas, did we have the right tools in place? And did we have the right information to know that this event was going to happen in the way that it did? Or was there still a part in the technology that was the unknown to see such a wall of water come through this part of the country?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, obviously multifaceted and probably, you know, something that over time we will kind of all, I think, collectively learn more about all the different components that kind of led to this, it's a cliche, but kind of perfect storm. From a weather angle, the technology that we have now is quite remarkable. The modeling that we have, you know, runs on an hourly basis and gives us these real-time updates of the potential for extreme rainfall, temperatures, humidity. And many of the models that we saw over Central Texas leading up to the event were predicting quite an intense event. I think as we went through the 4th, as I look back at the models, we kind of saw this kind of ramping up of the forecast. So as a forecaster, we often look at the models and we want to see what direction they're trending in. So is it trending wetter? Is it trending, you know, drier? And in the case of the 4th, the trend was not our friend. It was trending toward higher and higher rainfall. So that's, you know, one piece of the puzzle. And then, you know, what can happen with these models is that they will produce, you know, prolific amounts of rainfall. Sometimes they'll predict 10 inches of rain and only 5 will fall, or they'll predict, you know, a foot of rain and only 6 will fall. And as a forecaster, as a meteorologist, and someone who's also trying to, you know, hold trust in the public and produce the very best forecast, we're kind of balancing all of these different factors, you know, factors that the models are not perfect, you know, factors that we, you know, understand their biases. And, you know, these are all kind of things that are going through the head of a meteorologist, maybe when they step out onto the, you know, in front of the green screen on TV. It's, you know, they're on the hot seat there. So when I look back at the forecast, I think, you know, from a purely kind of a weather perspective, it was pretty good in that there was an expectation that there could be rainfall heavy enough to cause, you know, catastrophic flooding. life-threatening flooding. And that messaging, as we got closer and closer to the time, was ramping up. But, you know, it's tricky, you know, because human behavior, you know, people were sleeping. It happened at a time of day that, you know, maybe not particularly conducive to receiving warnings and that messaging. So, you know, that's the other angle, I guess, the social science angle of this and the human response angle and how people receive warnings. Or, you know, if you hear about, oh, it's going to be, the weather's going to be really bad, and then nothing happens in your backyard, and then sometimes those warnings become white noise. So I guess it's to say that we're always kind of, you know, pulling and tugging in different directions based on the information that we have. And I mean, I think that the forecasting was pretty good. Could it be better? Of course. And over time, we will see, you know, more improvement in weather forecasting. It's pretty much, you know, a guarantee. The more data that we have, the better the forecast can be. But I think it's, you know, there's another side to that coin. And that's how, you know, we can better communicate with the public and ensure that those warnings, that messaging is received, and in the different ways that we can do that, whether that's through, you know, phone alerts, through sirens, through different mechanisms. And I'm sure that the kind of full review of the things that went in to cause this, you know, catastrophe in Texas will hopefully touch on all of those different really important pieces.
Did you see a variable, now looking back on the forecast and the data that was coming in, that you are now like, huh, next time I'm going to keep an eye on that? Because I actually think that was a really powerful indicator that a major flooding event was going to take place.
You know, I think some of the modeling actually, I mean, as we went right up to the event, you know, 6 to maybe 12 hours before, so not a huge lead time, but enough to be like, hey, this raises a red flag. You know, we saw some of the models start to what we call print out, you know, more than 10 inches, maybe even more than a foot of rain, up to like 15 inches of rain. And that, when you see a trend like that, as the event is getting closer and closer, that is definitely, you know, probably a red flag. Typically, I would say we see the opposite. We see forecast models go really strong, like gangbusters on an event, you know, maybe 5 days off, and then they'll back the forecast off a little bit towards something that's less intense. But in this case, it was actually the opposite from what I saw in the day or so leading up to the event, where they were consistently ramping the forecast up for Texas. The placement of those really, really heavy rain cells, that can bounce around a little bit. So while they generally got the area correct, it may not have been right over Kerr County or right over the places that ended up seeing the heaviest rain. And that's kind of another subset of forecasting challenges with forecasting thunderstorms. Because to give a quick analogy, when it comes to forecasting thunderstorms, you're basically trying to understand what popcorn kernel is going to pop first in the microwave. And that's anyone's guess. It's you know, it's like guesswork. But we do know that, you know, when the ingredients come together that are ripe for thunderstorms, that they can be really intense. And that's what forecasters are really good at. Not exactly the placement of the worst thunderstorm, but the general area where the ingredients for thunderstorms are most ripe. So yeah, I would say that those conditions kind of ramped up as we got closer. And that is definitely, I think, a red flag when it comes to forecasting.
Wow, that's such an, I'll probably never forget that, Ben, thinking about thunderstorms, like the popping popcorn kernels, because it gives you an idea of the randomness of where like the intensity could really come from. And as you're talking, I'm thinking back to, again, I wasn't right near the storm, but we were part of the same system, and where the storm actually dumped a lot of the rain, as you were talking about earlier, is this sort of crazy coincidence of events that happened at exactly the wrong place at the wrong time. I remember Thursday going into Friday, it had started to rain, and my husband and I were talking in the kitchen. We're like, wow, we really haven't seen it rain like this where it hasn't let up. And it just kept going for days. And that's just something we don't, you know, Texas is known for storms. You get a storm in the morning and setting downpour, a lot of inches of rain, and then it's sunny and everyone's swimming in the afternoon in the summer. It's very difficult. So there's a lot of what you're saying there that I just want to lend to our audience too. That's really, it's making me think back on what we also, all of us heard in this area. One of the other things that you were talking about, a few different things, is this idea of communication and storytelling. And we have heard from, and we actually had one of these interviews with someone that was part of the flood. In the flood, their whole RV was taken away, and she witnessed this historic event. She told us this story. Her name is Julia Hatfield. And she said, yeah, we got a warning, but we get those all the time. You know, there was nothing in those warnings that were going to make us move. Then this was echoed as well by the person that was the nominee for NOAA here in the United States, saying, you know, I, as a meteorologist, thought with the perfect forecast, I could help people, but it's really that last mile. You know, can I tell them exactly what they need to know? And sometimes you can't do that. So with all that in mind, is AI a tool here, Ben, where you could see maybe, now here's the interesting thing about AI. Part of the problem with AI is the technology and data can be really interesting, but the way it's communicating is also a problem. So I don't know if we're in the same sort of situation, but do you see a role for AI to maybe help here? What are you seeing in the industry as far as the use of this new technology to hopefully be helpful to people?
Yeah, AI is, I think, in some respects, kind of revolutionizing the field of weather and will continue to do so in the years ahead. What it's enabling us to do is harness decades worth of data and patterns, weather patterns, to help predict the future. So kind of instead of, you know, using our understanding of how the atmosphere works, which is what traditional weather models do, AI models learn that pattern recognition based on historical weather. So they don't necessarily know exactly why rain falls out of a cloud, but they understand the patterns that cause lots of rain to fall out of the clouds. And because of that kind of factor, they can learn that in the snap of a finger. And these models based on AI can run a lot faster than ones that basically have to sift through and parse through and understand every, you know, what every last air parcel is doing in the atmosphere. Those can take hours to run, our traditional forecast models. So one thing with AI is the speed of the forecast and its delivery can increase significantly. Now, the
limit- Is it accurate though, Ben? Is it accurate? Do you think that even the speed, is it both fast and smart? Or is it just fast and questionable?
It's a good question. I mean, so the early papers that I've read in comparing accuracy of traditional approaches versus AI approaches is that some of the models, some of the AI models are at the same level or even exceeding the skill level of some of our more traditional approaches. But the limitation is kind of the scale at which the AI models work. So an AI model, and generally in weather modeling, what we're doing is kind of creating these, you know, maybe 10-mile grid squares all around the world. And we're trying to forecast, you know, what is happening in those little grid squares. But of course, in a 10-mile radius, there's a lot of different towns. And the weather that happens in all those different towns can also be different. So AI forecasting as it stands right now is quite coarse. And it doesn't allow us to get right down to, I would say, like a town or a city level because of that coarseness factor. But over time, I think we will kind of overcome that current limitation, and the precision of the AI forecasting will probably be so that it can be a higher resolution, as we call it, for a specific location. So at present, it's kind of this coarse overview of the broad pattern, but it wouldn't have created these really, really hot pixels over this, you know, central Texas where, you know, we saw that flooding event. So it's like, it's a, you know, as a forecaster, as a meteorologist, it's another tool on our belt, but, you know, it's not a silver bullet, at least not yet.
Yeah, super interesting. And it leads us back to that question of, well, how do you communicate the information? Just because you have good data, it's only worth it while if you can actually spread it and share it with people. So really interesting to get your perspective. I have two quick final questions for you, Ben. One is, one of the articles that I've quoted from you in the last year was the windiest spring that we've seen in 50, I think it was 50 years, if I have that correct, if memory serves me correct. It was that we saw a very windy spring. And now we have this flash flooding event in Texas and also concern about a very wet July. Can you take us to even further into the year to hurricane season? I saw you even put forward a snow forecast. I don't know how far to get into it, Ben, but what is kind of the rest of the year look like to you? Can you see into the future a little bit there?
Yeah, I mean, the amazing thing about technology is that it doesn't just afford us to see the next couple of hours or the next couple of days. We can create what I would describe as theme forecasts for the next couple of months, which kind of tell us if it's going to be warmer, cooler, wetter, drier, maybe not the exact placement of those different things, but the general direction of travel. And what I'm seeing for hurricane season, the peak, of course, occurs in September. This year for the United States, I think there's an elevated risk for landfalling storms. Last year, I think we had 5 landfalling hurricanes, which is a lot for the United States. This year, I would not be surprised to see more potential landfalls. So it is something to be, you know, mindful of if you live in a, you know, an area along the coastline that's prone to hurricanes. This year, that risk may be a little bit higher. I don't think there will be as many storms as there were last year. There were a high number of storms last year. So this year, it may be fewer storms, but maybe the ones that do form, you know, could be high impact. So I would say that's probably my, you know, number one message is that, you know, if you live in, you know, the Texas coastline, you live in, you know, Louisiana along the Gulf Coast or Florida or the Carolinas, coastal Georgia, you know, the eastern United States this year probably has a slightly higher risk than normal for a big landfalling storm. So right now, that's probably my number one message. And kind of connecting that with the pattern that we see right now, which is this, you know, abundance of moisture, abundance of water vapor, you know, that same pattern can be harnessed by a hurricane in the coming months. And, you know, we could see, you know, a really significant flood event that's potentially made worse because of that, you know, that increased level of moisture in the sky. So that kind of connects what we're seeing now to what we actually may see in the months ahead.
So it's like a chapter of a bigger story that you're seeing for this year. I do want our audience to know that despite being in New Zealand, you still do the snow forecasting for Hudson Valley schools. Is that correct, Ben? You're responsible for telling people when there's snow days in Hudson Valley.
Yes. Yes,
it's amazing. Which I just love that he's the guy. He's the guy that's going to tell you whether or not to go to school. Okay, here's my final question. Because you are so connected to the weather, do you always dress correctly, Ben? Like, do you always grab the right jacket? Because that was the challenge growing up in San Francisco. We could dial a number, Ben. I'm taking you way back to prehistoric times, and they'd give you the weather, and yep. It didn't matter. We always left the house with the wrong coat, Ben. So is that something your wife doesn't have to worry about? You guys already, you always know what your fit needs to be when you're walking outside.
I think I just heard her laugh in the background.
Good. Because, I'm glad.
Quick story. So we got married in 2022, and on our wedding day, there was a landfalling hurricane in New Zealand. So
come on,
even
how
a meteorologist,
often does that happen?
Even a meteorologist cannot, you know, guarantee perfect wedding day weather. Just one of those things. We get one here in New Zealand, usually one hurricane strength storm per year on average, and it just so happened to be on that big day. And I'll never hear the end of that.
You had one job, Ben.
That was it.
One
literally,
job
that
to
was
help
the line. That I heard that so many times. So yeah, I mean, look, here in New Zealand, actually, I'll say, you know, the climate's very mild. So even in winter, which it is, so the seasons are reversed. I should point that out. Winter we're in right now, while you guys are in summer. Auckland, where I live, it's, you know, about 60 degrees Fahrenheit on a typical winter day. So since I've moved to Auckland, I have not worn a sweatshirt. I wear shorts and t-shirt every day. So yeah, it's pretty pleasant place to live climate-wise.
New Zealand's hanging better and better, Ben. We support this decision, and that is hilarious. But I bet the photos are great from the wedding. I mean, come on, weather guy, hurricane. I feel like, you know, and just to remind, it's a really good reminder to end on, which is despite all the science and all the ability to predict, Mother Nature is still a mystery, you know, and there seems to be a forces that are a lot bigger than us that deserve respect. That's for sure. That could take you in a lot of different directions. Ben, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news. And we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.